welcome everyone to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. What's Working is brought to you by Regions. You're listening to one of our special edition Tuesday, Thursday shows. I don't know how long it becomes. It continues to be a special edition now that we're in our 8th or 10th consecutive week of doing stuff like this. It's just become a part of my routine. So let's go back and let's look over the past, let's say, 72 hours, certainly the last 4 or 5 days. If COVID wasn't a problem enough getting businesses to reopen or getting things back into shape, we now have these protests that are causing many, particularly street-level businesses in urban areas, to question whether to remain open or not to remain open. I grabbed some quick pieces of information prior to coming into the studio today. These stores are worried about damage and theft. I'll give you some information. Walmart closing several hundred stores as a precaution. Adidas and Nordstrom temporarily closed all U.S. stores. Target has closed or very much shortened their hours at 200 locations. So let's add another layer of complexity onto our struggle to reopen the economy again with the riots and the protests, everything like that. Now, Wednesday, let's change to looking at tomorrow, what we've got. Speaking of law enforcement, we got Trey Oliver on the show tomorrow evening. Now, you may remember Trey. He was on one of our Tuesday, Thursday shows not long ago. He's the warden of the Mobile County Metro Jail. And I'm telling you, his story tomorrow evening is fantastic. We at the What's Working franchise fell in love with him after spending just a short amount of time on the show. You find a warden, a jail warden, who also is an artist, and not only is an artist, but owns part of an art gallery, and you got something interesting on your hands. So he's going to give us a story, Trey is, tomorrow night, of where he's come from and what was his need to explore his artist trends. And I think it's fantastic. It's something, frankly, that I could easily relate to. Pressure, midlife crisis, you need an escape, you need a release. So he starts doing art. What I did when I was in this same situation is begin writing commentaries. And we begin to feature some of our commentaries in tomorrow evening's show. You'll hear the first one. Now, these commentaries, we've got about 100 of them now, 3 minutes each. They're called Keeping It Real, and they're broadcast on a different station. We're now going to pull them into the What's Working with Cam Marston program, particularly on Wednesday evening from time to time, when I've got one in the bank that matches the content of the show. And we'll begin that tomorrow evening. It's about a man that I met this past December who was a fisherman in Edenton, North Carolina. Just fun and a creative release. Don't forget about our social media stuff, folks. I'll give you the most interesting or the most popular social media formats. You can find us on Instagram at What's Working with Cam Marston. You can find us at Facebook with What's Working with Cam Marston, where we put relevant and unique content out there. Now, speaking of content, today's show is kind of an homage to the Mobile Chamber of Commerce. We'll first have Bill Sisson on, and he will be followed by Daryl Randall. They're going to give us an update of what's going on with our economy, with what's going on with the major businesses that so many small businesses rely on to fuel the economy. They are keeping their finger on the pulse, let's say, of our society in and around Mobile, and we'll get some information on what they see, what we can expect, etc. Looking forward to having these two gentlemen on the show. And the cap of the show is going to be a friend of mine. Her name is Erna Whiston. And in a strange opportunity in time of COVID, when she had suddenly a surplus of time on her hands, she and her husband started a small farm up in Saraland. It's much larger than what I had thought after I saw some pictures just a moment ago, but they've got an extraordinary bounty of vegetables that they have grown recently, and we're going to hear her talk about this opportunity to do something, to take this unique opportunity and create a little bit of a better environment for herself and to the organizations that receive the fruit of their bounty. They give so much of this away. And she's going to tell us her story. We'll have the show recap at 1:52 p.m. The best and most important things that I heard will be summarized at 1:52. Make sure you're back for that. First, don't leave. But if you do, make sure you're back. You're listening to What's Working with Cam Marston, brought to you by Regions. We'll be back. Let's light this candle, folks. Let's do it. This is Cam Marston. You're listening to What's Working, brought to you by Regions. And on the line is Bill Sisson. He's the president and CEO of the Mobile Area Chamber of Commerce. He's going to give us an update on what's going on out there, more than perhaps you and I can see with our own eyes. Bill, thank you so much for your willingness to join us today. Welcome to What's Working.
Well, I appreciate the invitation, Cam. It's a pleasure to be on the call today.
Tell us what the status of the business status of the city of Mobile is right now. What's going on out there?
Well, certainly, you know, COVID-19 has impacted our entire, you know, business community, small, medium, and large companies. But we are in the, back to work phase of companies that were, not able to operate during the period when they weren't able to open their doors. And so that transition phase is underway right now, and that's a positive thing. I mean, I think people are certainly, you know, ready to get the economy rolling again and sort of get out of the COVID-19 coma, I call it, which, you know, a lot of companies were forced into.
Yeah. So you've got to walk a fine line, Bill, between the safety of the employees, the safety of, the chamber employees, your business clients, your customers, your members' employees, your business members, but the need of the economy to get started again. You must be in a tenuous situation of not knowing exactly what to say at a given time. How do you deal with that?
You know, that's actually a very good way of putting it. Obviously, safety is of utmost importance, and you want, you know, the community to stay healthy. But a healthy economy also contributes to a healthy community. And so, both are equally important. I have been very encouraged, though, Cam, during this process to hear from businesses that, taking it very seriously. I mean, before the reopening, they were getting ready, had plans in place, certainly getting their, personal protection equipment lined up, making sure that they could keep their employees and their customers safe, as they begin this transition of reopening.
Many seem to be doing it from what I've seen. They're being very careful. Most, in fact, are being very careful. I know the chamber issued a business impact survey. I'm curious what the results of that have shown.
Yeah, we immediately mobilized, back in March when this all started, and I'm proud of our staff for doing so, working towards communicating with the membership. We have almost 2,000 members, and, we reached out to the vast majority of those. We began a series of conference calls to get feedback from them as to what they needed from the chamber. At that time, early on, they talked about things like PPE and certainly access to the CARES Act funds that were coming out of D.C. We were trying to assist, with all of that, but we also did several surveys through this process, not only calling companies one-on-one, but mass surveys. And the most recent one that we did was just a couple of weeks ago, and it was basically a COVID-19 business impact survey. And the interesting things that came out of that survey really won't surprise anyone today, but, almost 9 out of 10 of the respondents say that they've been impacted. We were kind of wondering, who the 1 out of 10 were, really.
Yeah.
But, I'm assuming that would be some retail establishments like grocery stores, others that have maintained a level of business during the process. But in any case, they are looking forward to a bettering economy. They are still very concerned about Q3, the third quarter of this year, but Q4, they're optimistic, will be a much better quarter. So, we have that to look forward to, certainly.
Yeah. I'm curious, Bill, if there are businesses in our community that are, and are you familiar with the expression, the 80-20 rule, 20%
yes.
of the businesses or 20% of the customers create 80% of the revenue? Is there an 80-20 rule in Mobile in that there are 20% of the industries that do 80% of the revenue, and how are those businesses doing?
Yeah, we're not different than anywhere else, in the country or the world for that matter. Those percentages pretty much, they pretty much apply here in the Mobile Bay region. Although we are actually a little heavier in manufacturing than some communities. For example, I think Birmingham's manufacturing sector is about 9% of the economy, and ours is, over 15% of the economy. So we really make things here in Mobile and still do that. largely those manufacturers continued to operate as essential services during the period where businesses were closed. So we haven't seen a big change in our manufacturing sector, but certainly we're seeing changes in port activity and supply chain related, you know, to what's going on across the globe.
Has Mobile been able to take advantage of any of this crisis in such a way to position it as a leading economic indicator, a provider of forward-thinking ideas or anything like that you've been aware of that as you've surveyed the Mobile business community, you say, oh gosh, we got to watch so-and-so. They're really taking this opportunity to do something special.
Well, I'll brag on our manufacturers. We've been, you know, having weekly conference calls with the top manufacturers in the area, and they very quickly, you know, mobilized and, you know, really changed their processes and so forth to make sure they could maintain safety for their employees. So those have been great examples of what companies can do. Now, they're large companies, typically, and so they can do that. Many of our small businesses didn't have those sort of crisis plans in place, but they can learn from those larger companies, and I believe that has happened here in this region. So we've done a good job of that, I believe.
The international portion of the Mobile area, and I particularly think of the Airbus assembly and how mm-hmm. closely they're tied to getting their supplies from Europe and such. How have they fared? Has this been a supply chain issue with them, or have they been able to remain strong?
Well, they've remained strong, you know, but of course, you know, the aviation sector has been affected tremendously because of COVID.
Yes.
I mean across the globe. So it will really depend on how quickly air travel, you know, comes back. And that really remains to be seen. I mean, we do hear that, for example, even here locally at the Mobile Regional Airport, that, you know, capacity will be doubling in the month of July compared to the month of June. But keep in mind, I mean, it has been, you know, almost down to ground zero related to travel. So it is coming back, but it just really depends on, you know, how this global economy recovers and how people begin to move around again.
You said it's going to double. I bumped into a friend of mine yesterday at the gym who works for Delta locally, and he said, yes, we're going to 2 flights a month in July. So they are literally doubling. And it now.
Right. And like I said, I mean, we were almost down to ground zero, right? So, you know, it'll be a gradual increase, and, you know, that'll happen across the country.
But,
all the legacy carriers, you know, the others besides Delta are doing the same thing. So they're beginning to increase capacity. People are beginning to make plans for leisure travel, I understand. And so the big question mark will business travel get back to earlier levels? And, you know, my guess would be that won't happen immediately, that will be a gradual process.
Yeah, I see it ramping up, slowly ramping up. I'm a Delta Diamond flyer, and they send us materials every now and then of what to expect, and they say it's going to be a slow crawl back. Are you aware, speaking of Airbus, of any plane orders that have been canceled due to COVID?
You know, I'm not aware of any. I just simply, you know, I'm not privy to that information. But you know, I have to imagine that you know, their orders will change. I mean, there's no way they could not, depending on, you know, the demand throughout the world, and particularly here in the United States, because we have such a tremendous amount of air travel that we do. But you know, my position on it is that we are lucky here in Mobile that Airbus, you know, they are assembling, you know, the hottest selling aircraft out there, the 320 and the 220. Those series serve midsize and smaller markets. The demand for those, you know, are huge. So with even their back order, I should think that we're in a pretty good position here in Mobile.
Yeah, I would think so, and I'm glad to hear that. I'm curious now, immediately in, let's say, mid-March, when the realization of the significance of the COVID virus and what it meant to the economy was becoming visible, I know the Chamber was a fantastic clearinghouse of content, and I was on your website frequently looking at the PPP program and how it applies to us. Now that that's kind of a memory, what is being demanded of the Chamber today?
Well, you know, we're at the stage now where we're trying to assist businesses as they go through this transition. And so, you know, we created a guidebook to help them, you know, get ready for reopening. And we are developing programming that as subjects arise, you know, issues arise, if people need new assistance related to something that has changed because of COVID as they reopen. And so really, we're still driving new content, but a lot of new programming is what we're working on now. And one of the things that I was, you mentioned the content, and I appreciate that. But one of the things I was most proud of, again, our staff just did a great job, but we started daily conference calls on various subjects related to COVID-19. And those were very popular. And, you know, they're recorded, and so they're on our website. Some of that could still be used today. I mean, HR issues related to, you know, reopening, you know, help with connecting, you know, to the federal CARES Act dollars, those kind of subjects, they're still out there. So we'll be developing more of those. And it's really helped us to think, Cam, differently about how we do our work. You know, we convene. That's what a chamber does. But we're going to have to convene differently now. We're going to have to provide programming differently now. And I'm just one of those people that gets excited about that. I mean, change is not bad. I mean, you know, and I think it's a good way of keeping things fresh and helping to be accessible to your membership.
Well, one of the things that I talked about with your team is an August workshop for my own content that we were all very excited about. And now we're not sure if it's going to go, and if it's going to go, what that's going to look like due to the new distancing restrictions, et cetera. We're kind of, you know, it's all in limbo. And that is very emblematic of so many other organizations out there that are trying to figure out exactly what to do going forward. I spent time on the phone yesterday with a client in California, and we're bringing a half-day program down into two 40-minute segments using something called Sling Studio. And suddenly I've got to get used to doing stuff like this. It's pushing me personally to have to explore new venues of delivery of my content. I'm grateful that these clients are still interested in the content, but I'm a little bit nervous about this new style of delivery of bringing a half-day program, for example, into two 40-minute segments. We leave a lot of meat on the bone in doing so.
Right.
Everybody's right. Having to rethink this type of stuff, huh?
Yeah, it's forcing us into that. And, again, I feel like that will be a learning experience for all of us, and some things will probably never go back to the way they were because we'll learn that, hey, we can do it this way now and actually reach more people on their time schedule. And so I think that, you know, there'll be a lot of lessons learned.
I think so, too. And I think one of the lessons being learned right now is, and I'm curious of your own opinion of this, is the lack of a necessity that everybody, quote unquote, come to work every day. There's a lot that can be done from afar. But my prediction, and Bill, I'm curious what yours would be, is after a period of time, people are going to have enjoyed working from home, but there's going to be this desire to connect in the workplace, and that office, the desire to return to the office is still going to be there. Maybe not in the same degree that it was in the past. We will change from this. But this desire to move back into the workplace and interact with one another is just innate to human beings. What do you think?
I absolutely believe that. I think in particular here at the Chamber, we tend to be extroverts just by nature of the people that get into this work. And so we crave that sort of interaction, that camaraderie. But I will say that this taught me that people can work from home and be very productive. I mean, I think sometimes people have question marks about that, but I believe a lot of companies have figured out, you know, people can be productive and work from home. So I'm wondering if we don't end up with more of a hybrid system coming out of this. And in some cases, we found that some people work better at home.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that'll be interesting to see how that plays out in the future.
I agree with you on the hybrid system. The thing that keeps coming back to me is that so many of these organizations, and as much as you may not like it, the truth is Silicon Valley typically advances new ways of thinking, particularly about the workplace.
Yeah, it's kind of California in general. They start all the trends.
Yeah, they do. The trends tend to start on the fringes of the country and then slowly move towards the middle. And frankly, as much as I love my hometown, they don't get here very quickly. Mm. But one of the things that it brings, working together, is creativity. And so many of these new technology locations out on the West Coast have been designed to get people to, quote-unquote, bump into each other. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that we miss in the workplace if we're all working remotely. Anyway, Bill,
absolutely. I mean, that's why we're excited about Innovation Portal,
yes.
The new incubator opening up on St. Louis Street. It's because of exactly what you said, so that people can run into each other and learn from each other.
You know, they need a coffee shop in the middle of that place where I can just go sit in and listen to people.
We're working on that.
Bill, we appreciate your time. We're going to have your colleague Daryl on in just a moment. Thank you so much for your work, Bill.
Thank you, Cam. We appreciate you. Thank you for your support of the Chamber.
I'm delighted to be a member. My mother was very involved back in the day, and I'm delighted to carry the flame for her. You're listening to What's Working, folks. When we come back, I'll have Daryl Randall, also with the Chamber Small Business Division. What's Working is brought to you by Regions. We'll be right back. Randall is the Vice President of Small Business Development at the Bowmeal Area Chamber of Commerce. We're going to talk with Daryl about the small business trends in the Bowmeal community right now. Daryl, thank you so much for your willingness to come on the show with us. Welcome to What's Working.
All right. Thank you, Cam. Thank you for having me.
So tell me what the Chamber is doing with Bill. In the previous segment, we talked about what's going on in the city of Mobile from perhaps a macro scale. Our focus of this show and my passion is small business. What is the Chamber doing today to help small business in the COVID economy?
Yeah, that's my passion as well, Cam. And we're doing several things. One of the things that we're focusing on right now is one-on-one consulting with many of our members, just trying to make sure they understand what resources are available to them. A lot of them are in shock after going through a crisis like we've never seen before. And they're having to make some changes, as we are as a chamber, as probably you are as a radio station. And so we're just kind of going through these things and trying to determine what some of the best options are. So the one-on-one consulting is one of the things that we really have been focusing on with our members.
I'm curious, with your small business members, is there something that they're needing more help on than others? Is it cash flow issues? Is it employee issues? Tell me where the predominant number of questions from them is coming.
Most of the questions that we're getting now, and they're starting to switch over, but they started off really with the SBA, the PPP forgiveness loan. They want to talk about the forgiveness form. So we're helping them kind of navigate through that form. And that form, if you've ever seen it, is like a tax form.
Yeah.
It's not that easy to complete. Many of them are working with their accountants or CPAs, but some are, you know, really small businesses, and they don't have one, any particular person they can work with. So we've been sort of walking them through that process. And it's something that everyone needs to take into consideration, but there are some additional SBA guidance that's getting ready to come out soon, as well as, I don't know if you've heard, but there's a bill that just passed through the House, and it has some additional changes to it as well. So we're helping them mostly maneuver through that whole thing.
So there are more changes coming to the PPP loan process? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, they are. The bill that passed the House, and we're following this, and it's nothing that has passed the Senate yet, but it's passed the House, and it actually does about four things that I know of. And that is, one, it changes the payroll covered period from 8 weeks to 24 weeks. I think the Senate wants to bring it down to 16 weeks, so they'll probably do some compromise. It lowers the percentage of loan proceeds that must be used on payroll
from 75% of the loan to 60% of the loan will be used on payroll. And it actually has extends the terms of the payback period, the terms. It goes from 2 years to 5 years. So those are three. And I think you have until December 31st to bring all of the employees back and to file your forms. So there are four major changes there that are coming down the pipe, but of course it has to pass the Senate. So we're helping those small businesses work their way through that process.
Yeah, no kidding. That's each of those changes sound to me as an admission, essentially, of the federal government saying this is bigger than what we thought it was. We're giving you more time, no more money. You didn't say there's more money included, but more time and more options because this is bigger and taking longer than we had anticipated. Is that your feel?
That's my feel. I would also add that it means that the federal government realizes that small businesses are hurting right now. So let's be a little bit more forgiving, a little bit more lax on the way we look for them to repay these funds. So I'm thinking that if the House has their way, we will get most of this through. If not exactly like we just explained it, it'll be something similar to it.
Are you aware of more funds becoming available?
Right now, there are plenty of funds available. I think as of yesterday, there were $150 billion left in the Paycheck Protection Program. And now the EIDL, that's different. They cannot apply for that right now unless they are an agricultural company because they were not allowed to apply in phase 1, 2, or 3.
Yeah.
And just so you'll know, and you probably have had someone talk about this on your show before, but if they applied for the EIDL in phase 1 or 2, they can reapply because I think 1 crashed and 2 had some other issues as well because it was a band-aid until they could get to phase 3.
Yeah.
So a lot of businesses can reapply. So we're walking them through that process. And another thing we're working with them on is the appeal process as well because, as you know, some businesses were turned down.
Yes.
For the EIDL and the PPP. So they can actually go through an appeal process as well. So lots of things to do. It's funny, when the COVID-19 virus hit, we had to work from home, and I'm thinking, oh, man, this is going to be terrible. How am I going to work from home? I worked harder from home than I did at work.
I think there are a lot of people that would vouch for themselves the same way. They had no idea that they could get as much done at home, and then they looked up after a week or so and said, you know, I'm tired of this. I'm working too hard from home. I think a lot of people have been surprised by that.
Ready to go back to work.
Yeah, that's right. I go back to work. I can stroll around and visit people at work. At home, I have no ability to do so. Hey, I'm curious, Daryl, if you've had any contact with any of the local small businesses due to the unrest in our society in the last 80-something hours, something like that. Has there been any requests of the chamber along those lines?
Not that I know of, Cam. I haven't really seen anyone that has been affected by it here locally. Of course, we see what's happening on the national news, and hopefully that won't happen here in Mobile.
Yeah. So many of the small businesses are approaching you right now from a lot of, and this is not the right word, but I can't think of it, regulatory points of view regarding the PPP loan. There's paperwork, there's detail, they need to understand it. You guys are doing a great job of keeping up with this. So many. There must have been a dozen revisions of the rules of it or something like that. But there's an element of the small business owner that we haven't talked about yet, and I'm wondering if the chamber's found a way to address that, and that is kind of the mental component of it. This show, I've tried to institute a thing in this show that we finish each show with a motivational, inspirational moment, knowing that a lot of people are challenged to put their best foot forward right now. Particularly in mid-February, they were seeing the best years they've had, and 6 months later, it stopped. And I'm wondering if there are conversations you're having either online or offline with small business owners about, hey, I need to keep my attitude right. And I'm raising my hand as I say this. This is a struggle for me. It was going great, and it vanished. And I'm having to really work with my own attitude to stay positive. Is this something that you're hearing out there?
Yeah, it's funny you mention that because when we had to stay in line with the governor's safer at home orders or work from home orders. Went home and we were getting phone calls, tons of phone calls from small businesses and small business owners. And one of the things that hit me right away, and I didn't know this, and I should have because I was a small business owner, a lot of them, it was like they had a very sick child. It was a child that was on, you know, a respirator or something. And it was because their businesses really were their lives, not only their lives, but the livelihood of the people that worked for them. So they were in shock. Many business owners and entrepreneurs that called me, I found myself kind of not only talking to them about their business, but talking to them about, you know, everything is going to be okay. And it was great because, you know, the spiritual side of me really wanted to console those people and tell them, you know, the great things that, you know, are going to come out of this, and God is going to really do some great things in your life. And it was really an opportunity to really talk to them about looking at this disaster as a time of opportunity. And you'd be surprised at how many people really understand that, and they were able to just take that as a nugget of hope and to kind of look for those ways of turning things around. And I would be happy to say that most of the people we talked to after that were very pleased about the way we handled those phone calls.
Yeah.
And we also had, by the way, AltaPoint. If you go to mobilechamber.com and you look under COVID-19 on some of our 10 a.m. conference calls, AltaPoint did a great job of talking about your mental health during this time of crises. And I would recommend all of your listeners go to mobilechamber.com and listen to that particular segment from AltaPoint. And they'll really realize it had some great tips on really how to stay sane during these crazy times. And one of them, I'll always remember this, was don't listen to too much news. And that was something I was doing. And I realized when they said it, you know, you're right, because there tends to be a lot of negative news that they cover.
Yeah, and my wife and I were watching the news last night, and I said, okay, let's turn it off. We've gotten the gist of this. They're now repeating what they've just said in six or seven different ways. This is not new news anymore. This is rehash, and there's so much emotion in it. Let's turn it off. And as soon as it was off, the emotion in our room and our house got a little bit better. It's amazing the power of that and how it can. And I've even heard a guy say in the past that I used to adore. He passed away about 6 weeks ago. He said, "You don't turn it off. You change the channel. Find something better to put in there." But anyway, we turned it off. And I want to compliment you on describing the business as a sick child. That is really accurate. I think that's the best summary of it that I've heard someone say. That's really accurate, Daryl. Thank you.
Yeah, and like I said, I owned a business for 5-6 years, and I realized it's a burden to the business owner because so many other lives are dependent on you running the business properly.
Yeah.
And many of these business owners that were calling me, they realized, wait a minute, my child is dying, but I didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
You know, it's like, what did we do wrong? You didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
And your child's going to be okay. And here's what we're going to do. And then look for ways of doing it. You know, so after we went through that process, I think they realized then, like, oh, yeah, we can do this. We're going to do this. And the chamber has dedicated resources to helping people get through this crisis. You can call the chamber anytime, and someone's going to call you back and make sure you get the resources you need.
Daryl Randall is the Vice President of Small Business Development at the Mobile Area Chamber of Commerce. Daryl, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome, Ken.
Folks, when we come back, we'll have the summary, and it's going to be quick because I've forgotten to write anything down, and we're going to talk to Erna Whiston about her farming exploits, which is a strange way to finish the show, but I think you're going to love it. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. What's Working is brought to you by Regions. As I promised, it's nearing 1:52 p.m., and I usually try to do the show summary every day at 1:52 p.m. to hear the best ideas that we have Normally, I also or recently have had a note taker in here with me. She, however, has chosen to abandon her father and do something that she says is more fun. And it stings. It stings. Nevertheless, here's what we know. Here are the notes that I've taken. We are transitioning. Many of the organizations are continuing the transition into an open posture, a word that we hear a lot these days, keeping in mind the health and safety and well-being of their employees. Secondly, this is from Daryl Randall. There's a lot of angst and concern about small business owners on the health of their child, which is the best I've heard it said thus far. The health of their child, which is their small business. And he is, and the chamber is, offering to anybody that calls, it sounds like, a pat on the back and confirmation and affirmation that things will be okay. And you know, folks, I ask those questions frequently because I need those messages myself. I am vulnerable to this. I'm an emotive guy, and the mood I'm in is more often than not very reflective of the most recent conversation I had. And it was great to hear Daryl acknowledge that there are people like me out there. Also, the PPP plans and all the other plans, there are changes coming. There are new rules to be found. They'll be let. The rules will be released before too long, and you can count on the Mobile Chamber to have gathered those, to summarize them, and to have them ready for you and me to understand. Now, back to what I was talking about with Daryl, we try to finish the show on a positive note. And today I want to introduce everyone to a friend of mine named Erna Whiston. Erna is wife to Bill, mother to an adorable and active 3-year-old. I can vouch for that. I've seen this boy. He's both a beautiful and active. She's an entrepreneur, and she is a leukemia lymphoma candidate for Woman of the Year, and she is an avid gardener, which is what I want to talk to her about. Erna Whiston, welcome to What's Working.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm great. I'm glad to have you there. Erna Whiston, welcome to What's Working. It's difficult to say, and that's a mouthful. Erna, I appreciate your willingness to be a part of the show. When you and I talked about this, you had mentioned to, actually, Lisa, my wife, had learned about it. During this extra time of made available during COVID, you all decided to begin gardening. And I thought, well, that's sweet. And then you send me pictures of this thing, man. This is not just a garden. This is for real. This is big stuff. Tell me first about this decision and what has happened as a result.
Oh, well, we started it a couple of years ago. Bought a little bit of land up north and thought, oh, let's, you know, have a garden. And we planted some things the first year and nothing happened. I mean, absolutely nothing. So I went to the extension program here, and they had recommended that we take some soil samples and send them off to Auburn University. So my husband and I gathered up soil and found out we needed about 40 tons of lime for anything to grow because the soil was so acidic. So then the next year, we just had all kinds of vegetables, but we were overtaken by weeds, and we're doing our darndest to make sure that it's organic. And, you know, we want to know what's in our food, so we thought this would be the way to do it. It's through a lot of trial and tribulation and dirty fingernails.
Dirty fingernails. And the size of the garden, like I said, in this picture is huge. Do you have an acreage on it?
Okay.
You there, Erna?
Yep, I'm here. Sorry.
What is the acreage of this garden? It's huge.
It's about a half an acre right now. We keep saying we're going to go smaller each year, but we don't. We get addicted to what we start putting in the soil. And are you able to hear me very well?
Yes, I got you fine.
Okay, great. So we started planting a lot of squash, and it got to the point when it did produce quite a bit of volume, we were just giving it away to different places like Dumas Wesley and dropping it off on our friends' doorsteps and canning as much as we could can. I learned how to can. I've learned a lot in this process. So things I've never done before in my whole life.
Yes, and that's COVID has done that to a lot of us. Now, you did tell me an interesting part of your story is that you're a native Alaskan. And that fresh vegetables were just not something you could get your hands on in Alaska.
No, if you wanted fresh vegetables that weren't gassed to get their color, and you had to grow them. And you know, it was very expensive to grow or to get vegetables up there in Alaska. So in the summertime, we always had a big garden, and that was part of our job was we had to weed it and
didn't use any chemicals or anything like that because they just weren't available back then. Now it seems like it's the norm, but we're just going back to the basics and having to rototill a lot and pull a lot of weeds and trying to figure out other ways of keeping the weeds at bay and studying like how to organically keep them, you know, from taking over the vegetable garden.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you had told me that you're going to have such a bumper crop this year as the squash and the zucchinis are continue to come up that you're making them available to some of the food banks out there. Is that still the case?
It is. It still is the case. In fact, I have a group of friends coming up. We make, we provide meals once a month to Dumas Wesley and to some of the residents there. So they're going to be coming up this week. And I said, you pick it, you keep it. So everything that we can get for them, we'll do that. And then I know that if it produces what we think it's going to produce, I mean, it's not, we can't eat all of it. So we'd like to be able to share that with people that are in need and, be open to hearing who we could help out in that capacity.
If you want access to any of, if you're one of the food banks in town, you want access to any of Erna's bumper crop of vegetables, reach out to me, cam@whatsworkingcam.com, and we'll forward your message on to Erna. Finally, Erna, just a few seconds left, 30 seconds. Tell me about the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society Woman of the Year, real quick.
It's a competition, friendly competition among people all over the nation to raise the most funds for cancer research. And unfortunately, this year we had to cancel a lot of our events. So everything's going online live on Friday. So we'll have a silent auction on Friday. And then Tuesday, they will announce Man and Woman of the Year.
I wish you the best.
So thank you so much. And there's a link, I think, if you could. Do you have a link to that? Or
I do, and I'll share. I'll send that out. Thank you, Erna. I appreciate very much. Go get your fingernails dirty, and thank you for what you're doing for these food groups out there. Folks, you're listening to What's Working. We're going to have a really interesting show on Thursday. I can't tell you more than that, but really, really interesting. I'm looking forward to it and, frankly, a bit nervous about it. What's Working is brought to you by Regions. I'm Cam Marston.